Welcome to the UK's only weekly FM and DAB radio show about transport and design. I'm Mark Ovenden, and in today's edition, we are talking the most popular form of public transport, the bus. What is the appeal of the good old bus? Surely they're all a bit outdated, aren't they? Are there any true fans of buses? Today, we're honoured to be joined by bus enthusiast Malcolm Payne. Welcome to the Catchcast, Malcolm.
Thank you, Mark. I'm Malcolm Payne, and I'm one of the volunteers here at the Isle of Wight Bus Museum.
Now, we're sitting in an old bus in Ryde. But, Malcolm, before I start on those questions we just mentioned, I just wonder if you could maybe share with us a little bit about when and why you became fascinated by transport and buses in particular.
Okay, where I grew up in Ilford in East London, our house was on a bus terminus. And so from a very young age, I watched the buses go past and I got a bit of an interest in the London transport operations. And it went on from there. We didn't have a car like a lot of people in the 60s. So whenever we went on holiday, we went everywhere by bus. And one of those holidays was here on the Isle of Wight. And as I grew older, I started to collect bus timetables. And I started to notice that the routes changed. And therefore, I became very interested in the history of the routes and why the routes changed. I went on to do a university degree in civil engineering, and London Transport offered me a job as quickly as I applied for it. So I've just retired after 43 and a half years working for London Underground in the civil engineering team. So working on railways, as is so often the case, buses were my release at the weekend, still transport related, but it was rubber tyre rather than steel tyre on the trains. Now I am retired, I keep the interest up. As I say, I'm a volunteer here at Ryde and I come over three or four times a year and I help with the archive collection here, cataloguing and sorting material. But I also help with TfL Corporate Archives, where my knowledge of the underground is very useful to them, because archivists tend not to be specialists in the subject. They're specialists in how to archive. So they rely very much on the support of the knowledgeable people. And I also work for the Epping Ongar Railway Bus Services out in Essex, where I'm regularly found as a conductor on their public 339 bus service.
Now, you beautifully answered about six of my questions in that lovely introduction, but I just wonder if, is it a silly question? You work in transport, but you're fascinated by transport. How do you sort of marry the two working lives and hobbies together?
The working life was railways. The hobby was buses. So they are different, very different. And anyone that thinks that running a railway is like running a bus service on rails or running a bus service is like running a railway on rubber tyres, they are very different. And the responsibilities are very different as well. So I was a team leader of a team of about 60 people, whereas here I am one of the team, but bringing my enthusiasm and encouragement to the others and transferring knowledge from the London scene over to the Isle of Wight and from the Isle of Wight back to the London scene. It is such exchangeable skills. It's unbelievable.
You wouldn't have thought that, would you, that a big metropolitan public transport organisation like London Transport would have some relevance to a small rural one?
The only difference, I think, is that the Isle of Wight is surrounded by water. London is surrounded by the M25, but it's not quite the barrier. But actually, over the years of my research, I have come to learn that the Isle of Wight, despite its much more open countryside, is very much like London. You've got all the same features here. You've got tourism. There was, and to a lesser extent still is, the heavy industry, particularly in East Cowes. Compare that with Fords of Dagenham. You had the need to get pupils to and from schools. You had the need to get people to and from the shops. And in days gone by, people would go into the towns for the cinema and the theatre. And all of these you see in London, just as you see on the Isle of Wight. Of course, the Isle of Wight is the only place now that's got a Christmas Day bus service that London hasn't got. So people that moan about the Isle of Wight bus services, you've got things that even London hasn't got here.
And weirdly, some night buses. And there are big cities in Britain that don't have them still, aren't there?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, London has a very big night bus network, but it amazes me when I pick up my Southern Vectis timetable to see how these night buses cling on, taking people home from the nightclubs, which was another aspect I didn't mention in the just now, really, is getting people to and from nightclubs after they've had a drink.
I was impressed by the night bus service when I came back here, I've got to say. Now, you explained how you became a bus enthusiast. Are there any other reasons that draw other people to take this up as a hobby?
Saying a bus enthusiast is a very broad brush. There are the people that take it up because they like tinkering with engines, or they like tinkering with bodywork, or they like tinkering with electrics. That there's other people for whom the interest is collecting the tickets. There are people that just like working on the buses and meeting people and sharing their memories of what travelling on the buses was like in the 60s. And of course, the number of times people say, I remember these buses with the pole on the back that we used to leap on and off when we were 16. They're now 60 years older, and whilst it wasn't advisable then, it's certainly not advisable if you're 70 to leap on and off. So there's a whole range of reasons why people get interested.
Malcolm, can you explain where we are right now, please?
OK, so we are actually in the Isle of Wight Bus and Coach Museum, which is in the former Southern Vectis depot in Park Road in Ryde. Easily accessible, it has free entry, and it's got a cafe and all sorts of things, and a wonderful collection of buses and coaches ranging from horse-drawn stagecoach right through to stuff that many of you will remember when you were young but are now 50, 40 years old and becoming heritage vehicles themselves. So there is something for everyone here. And if you don't like the vehicles, there are also displays of advertising, of uniforms and many other things to see.
And we're sitting inside an old bus right now.
We are. We're sitting inside a Bedford OB, which was the standard vehicle that many operators across Britain bought just after the war. They were used for both bus and coach tours, and here on the island, in fact, this particular one says that on the front it's on a mystery tour. Unfortunately, we're not actually going anywhere, but if we were going somewhere, you wouldn't be able to hear this recording because it is so noisy. But this was the luxury of the early post-war era, and many people that grew up in the 50s and 60s will have been on vehicles like this.
And remember the driver being in full view, and it's just so kind of homely, isn't it, really? I love the moquette on the seats too.
The moquette, clock up above the driver, the bunch of flowers on the dashboard, all making it that little bit special, because of course the drivers would probably be seasonal workers and they'd be looking to maximise their income. And the more little tips that you put this around the vehicle to make passengers' day that bit special, the bits you added to the commentary, they might all increase your chance of a tip at the end of the day, and that would help see you through the winter.
Now, this is quite an important building architecturally, Malcolm, isn't it? Talk to us about that in a second, but we've just got onto a really special bus. Can you tell us about this lovely vehicle, please?
Yeah, so this is an early post-war double-deck bus. It's a Bristol K and with a bodywork by Eastern Coachworks, as many of them in the provincial bus companies would have been at that time. But this particular one was built for routes where they went under bridges with low headrooms. So it's got a number of special features. As we're down here on the lower deck, we can see that on the right-hand side, there's a sunken gangway, so people sitting on the right-hand side, when they stood up, would have to mind that they didn't hit their heads. Full height headroom on the left-hand side. But if we were able to go upstairs, then we can see the different features up there because of being the low height bus.
Right, we're just mounting the stairs. Oh my goodness, it's quite strange. It really only does have a gangway down one side and really long seats. And so this was specifically built for what reason then, Malcolm?
So a standard bus needs a 14'6" headroom, but not all the railway bridges and other features were built with that headroom. Many of the routes were busy, so needed double-deck buses. So the solution was to build these bodies that had got the lower height on the vehicle. We've seen downstairs about the sunken gangway. We're now standing in the sunken gangway on the top stairs. And as Mark just said, we're looking at rows of four seats across the length of the bus, which wasn't particularly convenient for passengers or for the conductor, because I don't know anyone whose arms are long enough to reach right across the four seats to collect the fares or issue the tickets. So it was a little bit of a dodge to get that end seat to perhaps pretend to be reading your paper and hide from the conductor and try and get away without paying your fare.
And they weren't bothering stretching over because they thought, oh, I can't be bothered to get that one.
Exactly.
If they go for free, so what?
I mean, if you can imagine coming out of East Cowes at the end of a shift in the shipyards, the bus would be absolutely packed. There'd be limited time to sell all the tickets. The conductor would try and get as many tickets sold as they could. I am aware in London that there were locations where, again, with the work services, very short journeys, the conductor would just let people throw money in their hand as they got off and then print the number of tickets to match the amount of money they'd taken. So that's the main body of the bus. But if you look forward towards the front here, and if we work our way right up to the front...
Right, we're just going to the very front of the bus now. Oh, it gets a bit interesting here.
It gets very interesting here. We have to actually step up to the front seats. So it's all right. I mean, Mark is having to crouch down as he sits down, but once he's sat down, there's plenty of room. I now come up to issue the tickets and...
Oh. Careful.
There we go. I've just hit my head on the roof. So, again, it's not at all convenient for the conductor. But what is convenient is I've got a lovely handrail here that I can hold on to while I am issuing the tickets so I don't get thrown around the bus too much.
And the whole point of these buses was basically to avoid low bridges. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, it was to enable the buses to get down to Ventnor, and particularly in Sandown there was the low bridge at Lake that restricted the double-deckers, but that was the busiest route. That, at one stage, ran every 7 to 8 minutes during the high summer. There were that many passengers there to go on that bus.
OK, well, we've left the bus with the low roof, and where are we now, Malcolm?
Well, we've moved on 10 years to a 1950s bus, but this is one that's actually not got a roof, because in the 1950s, they started running open-top buses for the tourist trade, first of all between Shanklin and Ventnor, and later on various other routes. And so some of the original buses that were built with a roof had the roofs removed to run on these seasonal services. So if we make our way up the stairs, okay, we can see a few features from up there.
So we're going up the stairs at the back of the bus, which reminds me of my youth, because I'm definitely an older listener. And here we are on the top floor, no roof.
No roof at all. And Mark, you were just mentioning about being an older listener. We're looking at the back seat, which brings back memories for older people of what used to happen on the back seat. But we won't go into that on this show, I think.
Yes, because people were far too naughty.
So we are now right at the front of the bus with the legend across here, caution, passengers are advised to remain seated whilst the vehicle is in motion. And that's very much because even though the trees would have been lopped, there were still branches that would come in and may hit passengers in the face. But certainly on a nice hot day like today, a ride on this from Shanklin to Ventnor or up to the Needles would have been a real treat for many people. But while we're here, Mark, I'd like you to look across into the workshop here. And we're looking down on one of our big restoration projects, which is the reconstruction of a 1920s Daimler bus that started the Vectis Bus Company services on the island. We can see it's got solid tyres, it's got a wooden framework, the engine has actually been run, and this was found in a field several years ago, and there's been many years of restoration going into that, but hopefully in a couple of years' time we'll have that available for people to experience travelling in the 1920s.
Now, is it rude of me to say that there's not very much left of the top part? Looks like you've had to reconstruct that from scratch, almost.
We've certainly got some skilled craftsmen, and we're always looking for skilled craftsmen to join the team. You can see some of the timbers are actually darker. They are original ones that have been reused. there are other bits of the roof that are original. So, yes, whilst a lot of it is a recreation, wherever possible, the original materials have been reused on it.
And I suppose that's quite a common feature among restoration of anything, really, from the past. You're going to have some original bits and some new bits that have been lovingly recreated.
Absolutely. Heritage railways, vintage buses, vintage cars, vintage lawnmowers, whatever your interest, there will be a lot of recreation as well as the original bits.
It's going to be a very, very fine machine. And you said that that was the very first vehicle of Southern Vectis.
Of the Vectis Bus Company. So the Vectis Bus Company started in 1921, privately owned, but in 1929 the railways could buy into bus companies, and the Southern Railway bought roughly half the shares of the Vectis Bus Company and renamed it Southern Vectis and changed the colour from the old Vectis blue and red to the green that we're so familiar with.
We're still nattering about the joys of the Isle of Wight Bus and Coach Museum with bus enthusiast Malcolm Payne. I've called you bus enthusiast all the way through, but you really, you're a transport professional, aren't you?
I am a transport professional and an enthusiast. I will not deny it.
Explain to me about the bus we've moved on to now, please.
Okay, so we've moved forward another decade and we're now in the 1960s, but we're on a single decker this time. And this was one of the buses that was bought in 1966 to run the rail replacement service between Shanklin and Ventnor when that railway ran. So very fast timings to try and show that we didn't need the railways. Perhaps a mistake in hindsight with the roads around Ventnor now. But as this bus is currently presented, it's been painted in the livery of the Enterprise Bus Company, which was one of the early bus companies on the Isle of Wight from the 1920s through to the 1950s when Southern Vectis bought them out and became almost the monopoly apart from Seaview Services and then more recently some of the other operators. But this is, as I say, a 1960s bus, and it's one of those that's regularly seen in service here at the Bus Museum. And in fact, this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, we are running what we call the Rider Bus event, and we're also celebrating this year the 60th anniversary of the regular hovercraft service. So apart from our usual services, we are running a special one from the Esplanade through and round the Canoe Lake, because Apley Slip was where the first hovercraft landed when that experimental service ran. So all of the routes are free to travel on, although we do like you to buy a programme because that helps fund the event and money to restore these vehicles. Centred on the Bus Museum here at Ryde, there will be routes running out to Robin Hill, Newport, Quar Abbey, one of my favourites, the Donkey Sanctuary, and the ever popular open top buses down to Seaview.
Now, this bus feels vaguely familiar to me. Like, I was at school here for a few years, and I'm pretty sure it was this one and one of the ones we saw in the car park as well. A double decker with the back door, a lovely front on it. I think was it called a Bristol, one of those ones?
Yes, Bristol.
I kind of recognise those from the school run. That would have been in the 70s. Are they all going to be part of Rider Bus?
Virtually every bus here that you see in our collection will be running a Rider Bus. There's a couple that aren't fit to go on the road at the moment. They've, as with everything that's old, people as well as buses, things go wrong with them, and we found a few faults, but the mechanics here have been working tirelessly. The cafe staff have been out stocking up for the cafe. The scheduler has been working literally into the small hours to match crews to buses to the timetable, and there will be a few visiting buses, not as big as our White Rider event in October, but there will be trips for everyone. There will be everyone's favourite type of bus, I'm sure, to travel on.
I was going to say, because I've seen these beautiful old machines out on the roads more than once a year, so Rider Bus isn't the only event you do that shows off the wares on the roads.
Absolutely not. Say White Rider in October, but also throughout the summer season we do the seafront shuttles between the museum and the Rose Gardens down by, I think it's now called Ryde Transport Interchange for some reason. I still call it Ryde Bus Station or Pier Gates. but they run, and check the website, but they run once or twice a month throughout the summer season.
So apart from seeing the old buses, we also mentioned the fact that the building itself is really quite interesting.
It is. The building dates from the late 1930s. It was designed by the architect of the Tilling Group of bus companies. It's one of the few remaining original bus depots in the country. There is another one where I live out in Essex on Canvey Island, which is an original, and there are a couple of others around. But as far as the island is concerned, it really has the feel in there of being an operating bus depot, as you might have heard from some of the clonks in some of the interview.
And if you like, a traditional transport interchange, because right next door you've got a station.
We are just down the road from St John's Road station, and indeed the Southern Railway owned the land that the bus garage was built on, although it was later sold to the bus company. But absolutely multimodal.
And just at that point, a plane flew over.
Absolutely. A lot of people don't realise that the Southern Railway also had an interest in planes, and that might be one of your future programmes.
We'd love to. The hovercraft as well. I mean, the hovercraft celebrating 60 years, and the Isle of Wight's got such an important connection to the hovercraft.
It has. In fact, there is so much on the Isle of Wight in the way of transport history that it was the last place in Britain to run steam-powered buses. And over at West Wight, the freshwater Yarmouth and Topland minibus was one of the first bus companies to have an electric fleet.
So many firsts here to do with transport. Now, if you're somebody who perhaps may not be able to make it to ride a bus, or you're listening onto the podcast, how do people get involved if they want to support a local bus museum or transport museum? What can people do?
Best thing to do is to search on the website. There are lists of bus museums if you're not local on the island, and just go along to them, contact them through the contact. They are generally always on the lookout for volunteers, as is everywhere, because a lot of the volunteers are, shall we say, of the older generation. But youngsters, we've got a couple of very young conductors here on the Isle of Wight Bus Museum, and that's the next generation of people to keep this essential heritage going.
And it's not just a question of frontline things either, is it? We as a community organisation also encourage volunteers, but they don't have to speak in front of a microphone. I suppose you need a lot of people behind the scenes as volunteers too, don't you?
Absolutely, there are things to do behind the scenes. As I say, that our schedule compiler, who's working into the small hours on his laptop, some of the finance staff, there's people running the tea bar, the front of house people. You don't have to have a knowledge of buses, you just have to like talking to people, helping them as best you can, and it is a wonderful way to keep yourself busy.
Well, I could talk forever to you about these beautiful old machines, but please do look up your local bus or transport museum and go volunteer. They do need your help. Thanks to Malcolm Payne for inviting the Catchcast to the Isle of Wight Bus and Coach Museum.
Thank you for joining us this afternoon. It's our pleasure.
And I hope you enjoyed listening and learning as much as I have. Next week's Catchcast is not to be missed. We are fixing Britain's railways with